This is White Mountain Rescue Without a Trace, Part 10, The Night of Verdigris. Indeed, it is the night before Christmas in Plymouth because our first responders are spending the holidays in their own individual ways, and we've unlocked layer 4 of the campaign. Thanks, Mike. And are now going to deal with what we started at the last session. I will reintroduce the special rescue here in a moment, but first let's take stock of our various first responders. Roderick Lopes is marked by the chicken. Don't forget, because the chicken survived, you can you did add it to your you have it available as an item that will be hilarious to use. I'm gonna still say that you have that condition just because I think it's funny, because you've been bonded. Like the chicken is imprinted on Roderick. Mike Waitley, or Hesters, who knows, does not have any conditions. Very good. Sergeant Hank McBride has I will die on this mountain and impatient. And Dallas Bartmoss has no conditions. I don't believe we have any outstanding frowns. I believe we did them all last time. So keep that in mind, because now we are going to start doing some new things. Mark new end of session questions if you haven't already. So we can get into things, because we are going to be playing the Night of Verdigris. This is a special rescue introduced once the group has unlocked layer 4 of the campaign. As we introduced previously, a green mist has descended on the National Forest HQ and surrounding region of Plymouth. You are completely cut off from the outside world under this cover of green mist. Creatures from another world have begun to roam the streets and invade, hunting the people of your town and surrounding region. We saw some vignettes of some of these creatures being encountered by various townsfolk throughout the night. And yeah, the rescue question for the Night of Verdigris is how do we protect Plymouth from the dangers inside the mist? That is a complexity 8 question, I believe. Yes, it is. And we're still technically in the out of the woods phase, as opposed to the normal game procedure. So I will say that this isn't like necessarily stated as much in the rules, but it's a loophole I'm going to allow you guys to make use of. Since the out of the woods phase is the time when you guys can use vulnerable moves, you can still do that. Unlike a normal search where you'd have to like invoke a special move to like get access to the vulnerable move, you're still able to do that. It's just that there's a trade-off. And because this is also not a thing Daniel wrote into the game, but I've decided to introduce just to cause more dramatic tension. I'm stealing this idea from Jason Cordova. You guys have 2 hours to answer the question, or else. Well, not there isn't or else. In exactly 2 hours from this exact moment, we will go to the theorizing section of the rescue move. You have a timer to answer this question. So yeah, that is now, ticking. So we begin. I'd like to begin first by focusing on each of our first responders. We see Mike at the library, Roderick in the apartment with his mother. Hank is at Wendy's house with his family dressed as Santa Claus, and Dallas is at their Nordic modern home, having a digital dinner with their partner, which the connection just dropped out as the green mist rolls in. I'd like you each to narrate when the green mist rolls in. Just narrate that sequence from your character's point of view. What happens? I just kind of want you to set the individual scenes as the Night of Verdigris begins to settle in, and how you notice it, how you react. Let's just begin there. Whoever would like to go first may begin.
Roderick is on the balcony with his mom still smoking when the green mist rolls in, and she turns to him and is like, "Is this normal here?" And he shakes his head, and he kind of like leans over and looks. And they both get quiet for a second and they hear a scream in the distance. And just a visible chill runs down Roderick's spine. And he says, "I think we should go in."
So I told him, "Why are you, hun? Hun, you're frozen. Hun, you're fro. You might. God damn, New England Wi-Fi in winter times all the time. Like I had to get up, standing up. Dallas Martin Moss wearing like a one of those like thick collar." Wooden button cardigans, slacks, takes off their house slippers and then puts on some boots, grabs a flashlight, and is like, gonna go check the Wi-Fi, all this stuff like that, put it on a parka and everything, and stops for a moment and looks to grab like that whip. But leaves it on, like hanging up beside the door. And then I think is like stepping outside, and you can hear the crunch of snow, and doesn't realize that there's mist like roiling down below because the house is on top of like a little cliff. And so you can see the mist roiling down below, but Dallas doesn't notice it. And is outside fiddling with the Wi-Fi, like the dishes and everything, and just like the power boxes and everything like that. And just like, God damn, Mountain is just causing so many problems. Can't even have a goddamn dinner for once. And then just hits, and it's like, fuck. Fine, I'll read a book, and then turns and just sees the mist. It's like. Oh. Pulls up a phone, presses a button. You can hear the speed dial.
And there is no connection.
Fuck, 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 fuck. And just starts just like, fuck, 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 fuck. You hear the crunching of snow. Fuck, 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 fuck. Moving to the house. Getting ready to like fuck, 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 fuck. Trying to find a radio or something.
Is the power also out?
The power is not out. No, not yet, at
Okay.
least. Thanks for giving me an idea.
So we see Hank looking out the window and seeing the fog roll through the lights. So it's that's what caught his eye was the street lights, and he could see this green mist rolling in. And as he's like watching the lights, he sees like a some kind of large shape like fly through and make these like a little swirly swirls of mist. And then he looks again and sees another one or one or two something big flying through just out of the light. And he turns to his ex-wife and says, "Hey, get the kids down into the basement and have Jason start just kind of barricading the back door." And so she's
Wendy,
like, "What?"
yeah, Wendy looks at you and is like, "Hank, what are you
Hey,
talking about?"
I think let's just be safe. There's something weird going on, and
She
I
like
think
looks at she like looks out of the green mist as well. She says, "That is, oh God, you don't think there's some sort of chemical leak?"
well, just in case, maybe you guys should get down to the basement because this looks like that's probably the safest place. And just don't let anybody in until I give you the old secret knock.
Oh, okay, yeah. Three, then two, then one, then three. She got turned around and goes, "All right, kids, we're gonna go down to the basement." And she just begins to gather up the family.
Mike is like getting ready to like head back home from the library, sort of getting on like the jackets and whatnot, talking with the librarian about like her plans for the evening. And it's like Like she has like sort of like a Zoom call with some family from out of state and whatnot. It's a very nice affair, and I'm like, what? It's a pleasant conversation. And when they finally get to like the doors, they finally like see through, because like it like they were around the corner and like inside, and they weren't really paying attention to what was going on outside. And they both see like this green mist roiling, and Mike frowns because he's never seen anything like this before.
Let's paint the scene, everyone. How do these stairs manifest in the library that Mike begins to notice at this exact moment?
Fuck you, Alex.
Say it again. I was going over the gall that you had.
You heard me.
I like the idea of a bookcase like suddenly like collapsing as it falls. It's not actually falling. Instead, it's being pushed over by this pretty ornate wrought iron staircase that's painted black, and it just kind of forces the bookcase to flip over and spill books into the library.
Can there be more than one staircase?
Oh, there's several staircases coming from Mike
Delightful.
Hester's.
Fabulous. Okay, so behind the desk, the information desk at the library, the front desk, the chair that the person sits in just seems to like sort of disappear, and you hear a clatter, and it goes down and down and down, and there's a staircase going down behind the desk into what appears to be nothingness.
There is a like a knocking noise that Mike hears, like try like sweeping over this room, seeing these things appear and everything like that. Then you just hear Mike hear this.
You're getting
And then,
zoomed, unfortunately.
oh, okay, well, it's just this knocking, knocking, knocking. And Mike like looks around, and you see a deer is hitting its head against this durable window. And as it keeps hitting its head, it's causing lacerations on its forehead. And it's making that deer noise. And slowly you can see it's like a doe, but you can see antlers starting to slowly grow out and changing how the tapping sounds, and the antlers are made out of branches. Too far, sorry.
Shit, fuck, okay, hell yeah.
I'm not adding anything because this is just bad.
This is just uniformly bad for you. Yes, it is. The lights begin to like flicker in the library. The librarian screams, seeing what is essentially an incursion of stairs that are just appearing in from nowhere. You don't actually see them emerging, rather you just see the aftermath of their presence. It's almost as if the stairs have always been here and reality is just reasserting itself to compensate for their presence. There is a profound sensation of. Actually, I'll ask you this. This will be how you answer the paint the scene question, Mike. What feels wrong?
What doesn't feel wrong? Like everything, like reality is collapsing in on itself. There's the green mist outside. There's also the deer. There's the stairs that have
But you
perpetually
see,
just.
Mike, that's not my question. My question is not what is wrong and fucked up here. What sensation goes across your very being, a wrongness? How do you feel physically? What is a sensation that passes over you as a consequence, an aftermath of this perverse incursion upon your reality? I'll let you think on that. Meanwhile, Dallas, you're crunching through the snow. We just hear a trail of fuck, 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 fuck as you're walking to go find a radio. Is there a detached house? Where are you going to find a radio? I imagine it's not just one building for your household. There might be more, it
There's
sounds like.
a second. So it's technically a compound. The house is technically a compound. The house part was built on top of the mountain. The compound itself goes into the mountain. And by compound, it's just there's a lab just to test things. There's a compute, like there's like a server room. There's a security room. There's a power room and everything like that. So they're heading to the security room where there's a hutch about 50 to 60, like about 50 yards away from the house. That's like an alternate way to get into it that was closer to where Dallas was. And so
Understood.
is crunching through the snow, trying to get through there with the flashlight just dancing across.
You get to the security room. Please describe what we see around here as Dallas shines their flashlight across the dark room.
Dallas is a fan of the Dark Knight trilogy by Christopher Nolan. I myself am not, but the fucking like computer at the end that Lucius Fox made that like it's like this big fucking screen that allows them to like see all across Gotham and everything like that. It's definitely been modeled after that. There's a distinct like Christopher Nolan Batcave feeling about this place, about this security room, and you can see there is a dusty, gun safe that's like a bulletproof glass gun safe that has clearly not been touched or used in a long time, and there is just a series of radios. You can see there's one that says Wilderness Boys. There's one that says White Mountain National Rescue, like U.S. Forest Services. There's one that says Bart Moss Collective, and there's one that says Personal. And Dallas stops and looks across and goes, hovers over the Wilderness Boys one, and then grabs the U.S. Forest Service one, and just like does a click and goes, "This is Range. This is Dallas Bart Moss." Over. Is there anybody out there? Over.
That is staticky version of what Dallas just said echoes inside the National Forest headquarters. We see dark rows of tables in the office, desks, I should say, Christmas decorations as we slowly pan through the empty offices at Christmas time. And we just hear that static echoing with no one there on the holiday, empty desks, empty rooms, even Ernie's not in the shack or the shed. But as the camera pans, we see a single beam of light that is spilling out from an open doorway on a carpeted hallway. And we hear that echoing. And we see a shifting of something in that room with the light. We see the radio that's broadcasting, echoing out loudly, channeling Dallas's request for help, and a hand picks it up off the receiver. And you hear a voice say, "Go for embargo."
Oh, thank jeez and crow. Okay. David, this is Dallas Bart Moss.
Dallas Bartmas, how are you now? Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to yours and yours.
I
I'm
gotta
up.
say, I was just in the office today doing a little bit of holiday overtime. Not that, of course, it's overtime as in the paid type of overtime. I've
David,
yeah.
are you having a problem with communications on your end? I have no service and I'm up here on top of a goddamn mountain. I should be able to have the best service in the area.
No. I mean, I've been a little. I just noticed that the router seemed to have been acting up. I can't connect. And oh, hey, look at that! My cell phone doesn't appear to have any bars. Yeah, it seems like maybe we're having some sort of winter interference. I didn't think the snowstorm was going to be that bad. I didn't think it was actually.
David, this is my first winter up here on White Mountain.
Did you
Do you
prepare adequately?
yes, no,
You
I've
put
got
those snow tires on, right? I really told the guys down at the auto tires to really just treat you like they would treat any of us. I wanted to make sure that they gave you the right kind of the discount, because they're always trying to inflate the prices a little bit. I mean, God bless them. They're trying to just make a living and doing what they can, and it's better than some of the stuff you'll get if you go closer to the city. But I really do think that
David, yeah, I got tires on and everything. Do you see a green mist anywhere?
Oh, I haven't been drinking that much eggnog tonight, Dallas.
I look out the window.
All right,
Yeah, it's everywhere, right? It's kind of fucked up, right? We're gonna do something. Is there something that. Should we get the EPA involved? Is there like a chemical spill, or is there like striations in the ground that are cropping up different, like, I don't know, magmic overflows that is causing this green mist as it's interacting and oxidizing with our oxygen or something?
We just see David Umbargo as your just words are coming out of the receiver, just looking out with his eyes wide at the green mist, and he just kind of like looks down at the radio and his eyes set forward, staring back out into the night with a determined steeliness to them, and says, "Dallas Barbas, trust me when I say you called the right man. If anyone was here to serve the town of Plymouth against the possible evils of environmental neglect, David Umbargo is your man. I know what I'm going to do. I'll get on the case immediately. I'm going to need help, though. I'm afraid we're going to have to be working overtime. And bring a pen." And he sets the receiver down, and we see that David Umbargo power walks through the hallways of the National Forest headquarters with his little key ring, and begins to unlock filing cabinet, filing cabinet, filing cabinet, pulling out files and paperwork and pens, and begins to set them on people's desks, and he begins to flip through the National Forest employee handbook for White Mountain, and begins to flip through to find clauses, to find procedures, and tries to make a few phone calls, but nothing is going out. It's all cut off from the world around him. But David Umbargo is alerted, and that is when each of you, because David Umbargo last season made a thing, well, did a thing that most of you probably groaned about. Hank may have thought differently because Hank is of an older generation, but I imagine Mike and Roderick probably had to roll their eyes a little bit. See, Mike and Roderick, David Umbargo was pretty insistent that everyone not forget about the most valuable tool that he ever believed a National Forest employee could have on their side when all else fails: rely on a pager. And that is when we hear the little ba-da-doop, ba-da-doop, the pager alerts on Hank's pager, on Roderick's pager, on Mike's pager, at the worst possible time for Mike. But you are getting a notification from David Umbargo to you are needed at the NFS headquarters. We'll get to that, and we'll get back to Mike in a moment. Let's cut over to Roderick, as you had looked out to the mist and said you need to get out there, and you heard screams. As you and is your mom coming with you, or is
Oh no. I at least tell her that maybe she needs to stay inside and probably get interrupted by the pager when I'm telling her, maybe let's go back inside.
Yeah, she is very confused. And your mother goes, "Honey, what is going on? I don't understand. What is there? Is this some sort of a health hazard I should be aware of? Should I
Yeah.
be cl closing the windows?
Yes.
Do you want me to put on the air purifier?"
You know what? I don't think that hurt. I definitely close the windows, lock everything, make
Oh.
sure the seals are real good, and don't go outside and at all. Don't answer the door, don't go outside. I have to I this has to be some sort of health hazard because I'm getting a pay. I gotta go to work. We're gonna probably handle this, but you just don't go anywhere.
Hey, well, be safe out there, Roddy. She gives you a little kiss on the forehead.
Aw.
And
So cute.
we see Roderick in his car driving through the very thickly obscured green mist, driving up to the NFS headquarters. I assume we also see Hank driving in his truck up to the NFS headquarters, and Dallas also making a headway. And then we cut back to the library. Mike.
I think Mike is just terrified of what's going on. It's sort of that sensation, like Mike, if pressed, would describe himself as being scared, but oftentimes he feels a little bit isolated from his peers because, like, the sensation of fear doesn't match up with how other people feel fear. Most of the time, people feel fear as though it's like a pit in their stomach. But for Mike, it is literally the bugs crawling underneath his skin. He wants to rip it off, get rid of it, set it on fire. But he can't do that because that's not a reasonable reaction. And then we hear do, 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 do. And Mike just takes it and like throws it at the wall, like I'm just like terrified because he doesn't need David Embargo right now because there's shit going on and you probably call this an environmental hazard. It's not. It is the end times.
I need you to make the dangerous move because facing something you fear is very much the case here. What are you afraid of happening should you lose your nerve?
Like, honestly, like, he can't help out the librarian because he'll just, like, have a complete utter meltdown right here, and, like, there's probably supernatural stuff they'll attack.
It's worse than that. You are going to be. As a result of you kind of like freezing up in your panic, the window to escape on your own will close and you will be trapped in the library with things here with you. So go ahead and if you wish to pursue or continue, you may, you know, the stakes. Otherwise, you can just flee the scene immediately and not have to roll at all. But if you wish to keep going, it's going to be plus composure.
Yeah, I think like it like in terms of like fictionally positioning, like I want to save the librarian and like
Yeah,
get
that's
out.
yeah. You can, yeah. So if you're not backing down, it's gonna be plus composure. Do you have any items you're gonna be marking here?
I don't have any items that I could mark,
Fair
because
enough.
I don't, because 90% of them are guns.
Yeah, sir.
And I don't think I would have access to them at a library. So, but however, that is a 7, regardless.
Hey, very good. I want you to describe how you escape with the librarian. I want you to narrate that bit and I'll tell you what happens next.
Like I think the librarian is like because like we effectively lock the door so like people wouldn't intrude into us and the librarian's trying to like find the right key and stuff and just is freaking out. And I think I just like go back to like sort of the main lobby or find like a chair or, like and I drag it in and then I just throw it at like the door and like the glass shatters and we could just like scoot underneath the bar and just walk out.
Yeah, as you're doing that, we see that something is coming up the stairs. Long tendrils of green mist that slither around the ground like tentacles, poking and prodding as if searching for something, begin to spill out, steadily filling the library with this green fog as well. And these snaking tendrils, as you shatter the glass and begin to escape, one of them gets just close enough to wrap around your ankle and touch you in that brief moment before you escape. A minor memory or skill is siphoned away from Mike. Describe what it is. They will no longer have access to this memory or skill.
God, Alex asking all the hard questions tonight.
Daniel wrote that one.
Oh,
I just want to say y'all have such sibling energy.
I think with because I do owe a crown of the forest, I think this would be a good opportunity. I think we cut back to when Mike Whitley, effectively around college age, was like was sort of like trying to expand his horizons because like he was a little bit a nerd, a weirdo, effectively didn't have much friends, and like the ones that he did have were they tried to understand him, but they really didn't get it. And they were like, oh, come on, let's go out tonight, let's go party. And like they dragged like Mike to like this club, and it was just so loud, so boisterous, and he would rather just stayed inside, do a puzzle or anything else besides this. Even cleaning would be preferable than to be here right now. But he no longer remembers that because that was taken away.
I think for the sake of not necessarily expediency, just the story, we will describe, well, like not describe, we'll cut to the various peoples arriving at the headquarters, cars pulling up in the parking lot, making haste to get inside. For now, glimpses through the mist signaled some of the potential dangers, but nothing quite extreme yet happened on the road here. Let's paint the scene about the headquarters. I'm gonna pull from one of the out of the woods questions here. I don't think I've done this one, but I'm going to put a spin in it all the same. There is a large bulletin board outside the Ranger's wing that Mike would be very familiar with. There are wanted missing posters posted here, notifications, official notices for things coming up. What posters here ominously seem to echo that this was fated to come tonight.
There's one. There is a. It's like a missing child's poster, missing kids poster. A Misty Reynolds went missing on Christmas 20 years ago. Was last seen at Green's hunting store. That kind of thing. Like it's just like looking at it now. You're like you would overlook it, but you're like that just seems too on the point. That kind of thing. That like double checking it now would stick out.
I think up at the top of the bulletin board is an old there's an old posting from the 1990s, and it's been covered over, but you can see on the corner it's not a wanted poster, but a missing persons poster for Karen Masterson and her dog Max. The picture shows her like out on a hike, like the one that she disappeared on. And even in the picture you can see like a tendril of mist weaving through the trees behind her as she walks.
I think there's a poster that's it's more of just like a little bulletin on the side that is reminding people about how to travel safely, like specifically like fog lights, like in heavy fog because tis the season.
I think because like this a post this board is meant for like a like missing people just sort of alerts to like sort of thing that hasn't prevented people put for putting like wanted ads for like recruitment things, such as like a local hunting club for hunting strange creatures throughout the night because you never know what's actually out there. And for some reason, after like every time Mike takes it down and whatnot, it always ends up back up. It's Mike always considers it like a public nuisance, but he wonders, how can they put it back up after I turn around?
David Embargo has pinned up a large surveyor's map of Plymouth and surrounding area, the NFS headquarters, already begun to put in thumbtacks and little markings, drawing circles around the predicted region of where the cutoff point seems to be. This kind of bubble predicted from just a cursory survey of the area in the time it took you all to get here. And he is giving you all folders and paperwork and things like that. And he drags out from a maintenance closet. You see, by the way, that Ernie Gearing is also here. He's been summoned, as well as Clint Thicket, the search volunteer team leader for, and a few of the other search volunteers seem to have been pulled in on Christmas to come help out with this mysterious event. A few of them actually look shaken, and a few of them are missing, as if maybe something could have happened to them. Who knows? But with a loud, just metallic grinding screech from wheels desperately in need for WD-40, David Umbargo pulls out a roll cart with an overhead projector onto it into the middle of the bullpen and brings out a slide presentation that looks like it straight up may have been created back in the 80s or 90s. It looks old and it looks like official government style from that time period for the NFS. And he plugs it in, turns it on, clicks a button, and on the screen, or rather just projected on the wall in big government regulated font, is just a thing that says, "What to do in the event of a hazard that is not covered in the NFS regulations and bylaws." And you are all here on the case.
Dallas is going to set up their phone in a way, thusly, that makes it so that they can record this entire slide projection like presentation in case there's anything that they can use.
Sure, why not? I like that. Yeah, it's very boring, but it mostly he just drills into you. This is basically regulations for things that are not covered in the regulations. This is very bureaucratic. This is very like, we are dealing with an event that is not covered in the books whatsoever. So here's what we do in the event of an event we have no idea what to do in. But the scene is set, things are prepared, you are all together. And I guess kind of, I just want to see where this goes off with character interactions. So, role play.
I think the first thing that happens with Roderick is that David Embargo puts a big old file, like that big old paperwork file on like near him, at him, and he's like, "David, what the hell is this?"
This is everything we need to cover to make sure that we are effectively doing our duty to the people of this region while we get to the bottom of whatever this strange occurrence is. You can thank Mix Bartmoss over there for bringing this to my immediate attention, and thankfully, I was ready to get all this together on the drive up. So it's very important that we're all doing this by the book because we are outside of the book, my friends.
Brought my pen, David.
That's fabulous. We can fill out fucking paperwork after we deal with this. With all due respect, David, I really think that this isn't the time to be doing slideshows and shit. We gotta actually like do something.
All right, well, I'll see if there's an extra slide in there. He walks
My
over to the
God.
closet.
Gosh, Roger just does this.
David Embargo. There's more than just going on in terms of mist. The wildlife is being currently affected. The people are in physical danger. Potentially there's going to be attacks tonight, and we can't really be waiting around for doing paperwork, and like things can be handled retroactively with the paperwork.
So, what if we split up the two teams? We have the slide paperwork team, and then we have a search and rescue team.
Mike, let me just put this forward for you. I like your zeal, really, I do. It's why you've been an invaluable asset to the NFS for all these years, second only to Sergeant McBride in terms of your dedication and devotion to your duties as a ranger for our fine and noble service. But I need to remind you that there is another very noble calling that is a backbone of the services of our organization, and that is simply, as much as you might hate to admit it, the bureaucratic paperwork that flows through the veins of our government is also what allows us to continue to do our job effectively. It is a group in tandem. One is not superior than the other. Yes, one saves lives through action and dedication. Others save lives through official government-regulated filings and paperwork. And listen, okay, I'll just cut. I'll, let me just cut the crap for you, Mike, because it's Christmas. I'm frightened. And I know what to do for my own specific job. And that said, if this is not adequately documented, if this is not adequately handled by the means of the National Forest Service, what separates us from the animals, Mike Hesters? Paperwork, red tape, bureaucracy. It keeps us from falling into utter chaos. And so, I agree with Mixbart Moss's suggestion. Someone needs to keep up the paperwork end of this thing so we can keep everything flowing. So I volunteer to bravely stand post at the NFS headquarters and fill out these forms until my knuckles turn red and my fingers cramp into my early onset arthritis.
About 15 minutes ago, when the slideshow started, Hank looked over at Roddy about the time that Roddy said, "What the hell?" And squinted his eyes, and did his head in a little like motioning, signaling to Roddy that he was going to the shed, but not by saying anything. And he slowly backed towards the door, while nodding and backing towards the door. And then as soon as David like pointed at something, Hank just turned around and walked out the door.
Yeah.
Yeah,
You.
Roderick just nods like very subtly, like
David, I would like to say that we do at Bartmoss Solutions have something to present for your presentation as well, and for your records as well. I just got the notification here. It's a direct line. I kind of had to send it by fax.
I was like, you got signal?
Not really signal, no. It's about the best that I can manage. I would like to use the real-time satellite images
Hell
of my
yeah.
state-of-the-art everything, to reveal two relevant clues that can be seen from above.
Fantastic. I can give those to you right now.
Hell yeah.
And
I'm
sharing
just gonna
those
walk over
details.
to David and put them on the slide projector.
Awesome.
You see. See, it's two clues, right?
Yeah, two clues.
I'm gonna. On the satellite imaging, there is a space in town, a notable like area that is free of mist, almost as if there is some sort of invisible barrier that is keeping them from entering this place. The mist cannot enter this place. What is it?
What is ridiculous but makes sense in a town that something would not be able to go into because of an arts and crafts store?
It's the fucking Hobby Lobby.
The hobby. Yeah,
The Plymouth
something like
Hobby
that.
Lobby.
Yeah.
I don't know why that makes sense, but I'm here for it. Okay. So the Plymouth's Hobby Lobby is just straight up seemingly protected somehow, or a bubble of the mist that keeps the mists away. The second clue, let's see here. I'm actually gonna say that I'll kind of like stretch this one because the way that this works is I have 10 clues I can kind of repurpose and give out because this is a considered a siege structure. I'm gonna give you the clue. There's a clue that is basically a way to communicate within the mist zone. I'm gonna say that like your this satellite is able to help keep some communications bouncing through here as well. So you're able to use this satellite to kind of help relay communications within the mist zone.
Got him.
That is your second clue.
It's going to work off of a slim to a sea hair's worth of frequency that you're going to have. But if you can go ahead and navigate, like, just go ahead and get radios, tune them to this frequency. It's going to be garbled. It's going to be shitty. You're probably going to have to repeat what you have to say. But we can probably communicate with each other as we coordinate and find and figure out what's happening out there.
Hank steps out into the night, walking towards the shed. When you see, actually, no, you get in the shed. You enter the shed free of difficulty. What are you fetching from the shed? I will consider this working as the way that the woods prompt does, so you can actually just like get an item from here. I believe you can if you mark it. Yeah, you can. Oh wait, no, that's not how it works.
I am flat out of I have no I have no nothing in my personal item, so I need something.
Yeah, so
So
this is what yeah, it's once per out of the woods phase, team members can either describe how they are maintaining their gear and unmark an item, or get one of the following items from the list to add to their equipment. And then additionally, the first responders may requisition special equipment during the course of the campaign to add to one player's personal item. Okay. So you can either clear an item slot, get a new item, or requisition special equipment that's not on that list.
I am looking for the list, unless you have it handy.
Yeah, here I'll post it in the chat. And the way that you wrote it is that you cross it off after it gets picked. So I guess you had grabbed something off of this before, I believe. I can't remember what you grabbed before
No,
though.
I repaired my net.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay. So yeah, once you take something off this list, it is unavailable. It gets crossed out.
I guess I'm going to get the headlamp.
Cool. I will say that if Hank wants to grab equipment for the others, everyone can. If everyone does want to take something from that list, then Hank can grab it. And like kind of like bring it back with like kind of like took stock if anyone wants to grab things from there. Or if you wanted to have something unmarked, you'll have to go there yourself though. Because you'll have to, see to it yourself. But I'll say that for the time being, you grab what you went to the shed for, and then you hear a large something landing on the roof of the shed, causing the little light to swing slightly, and you hear something clang, clang, crawling on top of the shed's tin roof. What do you do?
I think I'm going to see how it reacts if whatever's up there, and I'm going to pick up like a big like 5 gallon empty 5 gallon like metal water can, and throw it on the to the far side of the room to see if the thing tracks it. And I don't know if that's an investigation move. Is that I guess it's kind of an investigation move.
I was going to just say that that happens, but if you're trying to discern some information as well, I will say, yeah, you can do information move. Well, it's got to be plus sensitivity because there is something supernatural present. So even if you're not directly interlacing with it, it has to be plus that. I'm going to give you disadvantage from I will die on this mountain.
Oh, 6 and a 4. Dang it. And 6, a 4, and a 5. So that's a 9.
Damn, okay. Yeah, there will be a clue and a complication. I know very well what your complication is going to be. But for the clue, while you're rifling through this place and you grab this water can to throw, you stop and you linger because you notice a large cache of weapons and ammo that are in the shed that counts as a clue.
That Ernie had like set up behind. Okay.
Yeah. And actually, I think what it is, just to justify it, is it's confiscated from a poacher that they put it in the shed temporarily, but it's basically some like rifles and ammunition that was confiscated from a poacher this past season.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. But the complication is going to be that as you throw the thing, you hear the ka-dunk, ka-dunk of the thing on the rooftop. And then something comes flying through the shed's window, shattering the glass as this large turkey vulture-like creature with a long mosquito's proboscis slams into the wall and like butts its head against, stabbing it down into the water can and shaking its head. And you hear even more thunks, ka-thunks, ka-thunks of things landing on the rooftop as this not vulture stabs its proboscis into the water can before pulling it out and seeming to just not like the taste of water, and then its head turns and spots you. You're in danger, Mike. Not Mike, Hank. It's going to be the dangerous move. What do you do, first of all? And then we'll get into what you're afraid of happening here.
I am going to pull out that revolver, which I got for my it's based on my move. What's it called? It's called I'd never need this again. And he's just gonna grab the stuff for that he think that like there's probably like duffel bags and stuff. So he's just grabbing the stuff. And headlamp on and just like running through the door firing as he's carrying. That was one of my kids. That was not a. Did y'all hear that?
It was a not vulture.
That was not a
No,
double.
I didn't hear anything, but yeah. Dangerous move. So what are you afraid of happening here?
You guys don't hear him screaming?
No.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
Yeah, Zoom's doing a good job.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm gonna use the advantage for the gun to probably give me a flat roll. Is that right?
Yes, it'll be a flat roll, but what are you afraid of happening here?
I'm afraid that they'll just like as soon as I get outside that they'll just like dog pile me. Well, not vulture pile me.
Yeah, vulture pile you. Yeah, not vulture pile you. It's worse than that. They're gonna drink all of your blood and leave you and the equipment out here in the snow dead. So that is definitely the situation. So if you don't want to back down, you want to go through with it, make the roll.
What stat do I use?
Sensitivity.
Okay, so that's a flat 7.
Seven. Okay. You manage to escape, and I'll let you narrate the way you flee back into the headquarters. But the complication, unless you choose to mark a crown, is going to be that in your flight, you are not going to be able to carry one of the items you have been requested to bring. You can choose which item you leave behind. From the list that people have provided here in the chat of what they were wanting. But that's your complication, unless you want to put on a crown.
I do not want to put on a crown, so do I have any volunteers?
You can leave the fire extinguisher there.
I really like the fire extinguisher though.
Okay.
You can get rid of the hatchet, absolutely. That makes
Okay.
it more interesting. Lack of defense. That's fine. Fist
So
fight the
the
turkey
hatchet falls out,
vultures.
flips out of the duffel bag
What if you
as.
had to use it to get away? Like almost like ch yeah, like throw it. Yeah.
Because
So
I
I
need to
can go
reload.
ahead.
I need to reload he shoots
Yeah.
all six shots of his pistol and he can't reload it on the run, so he holsters it and just flings a hatchet at one of these creatures.
Incredible. Yeah, but then you do manage to throw yourself back out into the open air and run the gap between buildings, get inside, lock and secure the door, laden with the equipment that you did manage to haul. And cutting back elsewhere to the other first responders, what do we have going on here?
I think we're gonna have to go out and travel. It seems like there's stuff out there, is what you're saying, Mike. There's things out in that mist.
Yes.
So what do you think's more important? Do you think being able to track these things or putting them down is more important?
I wouldn't say you could take these things out.
Why did you say that?
They're things.
Oh. Shit, I was worried about that.
Okay. I've got something in the rover. I just have to go and get it, but I need to get a look outside. So I need to see if there's anything we can assess, anything that would can help us out here, things of that nature. But I gotta get out to the car.
And then you hear gunshots.
Oh,
I definitely need to
shucks.
get out to the car.
Hank's out there.
Hank. Oh, God. Mike is running out because, like, if there's gunshots, Hank has brought out his gun. So, like, the only way to help assist in this situation is m with more guns.
Of course.
Roddy, can you cover me?
Absolutely.
A few of the search volunteers also like throw up their hands to come help cover you to get to the car.
Perfect. Thank you.
You're running outside into the parking lot.
Yeah.
What are you trying to get from the car?
I'm using all of my boxes of state-of-the-art everything.
Makes sense.
I am grabbing the go bag.
Go ahead
So
and read
as
that,
I'm
yeah.
getting covered, I'm running out to the Range Rover, and you open up the Range Rover and just dumping out all this expensive like camping gear and hiking gear onto the ground and everything. And then I put my thumb over a fingerprint scanner, and then where you would keep like your spare tire slides open, and you see a duffel bag, which quick Guy Ritchie quick cut, or like Edgar Wright grab puts the hands on the duffel bag, slams down on a desk inside of the place, opens it up, and then I'll pull out a firearm that anybody might want to have that has to be used during this mission, or it's gone forever. So like if you're it's it, and it's stuff that's like probably like World War II collector's items. So you see like an M1 Garand, you see like just like just like
And I will specify, as the move says, it's a weapon and also another item.
at the very bottom, there's a box of that I pull out and I unclasp and open up. And each first responder can grab a firearm, but I can also assign to you a tripwire landmine, flash brain grenades, tear gas canisters, and sticks of dynamite. Yeah, I think you're just gonna see like Dallas looking over and then start sitting on desks, a bunch of tear gas canisters on Roddy's desk, going to put a tripwire landmine on their own desk, sticks of dynamite on Hank's desk, and then flashbang grenades on Mike's desk. Yeah, so take the firearm of your choice, and then also I have assigned to you an item to add to your personal quarters that will help you.
Mike, you run to find Sergeant Hank, essentially securing the door to the shed outside. Imagine some light barricading is happening, but he looks none the worse for wear otherwise.
You okay, Hank?
There's some flying things out there, like weird flying things. Big flying things, like mythic looking flying things. Here's some binoculars. See if you can keep them. And he's put like a trash can in front of the door and like takes off his belt and is like wrapping around the door so that it can't open.
Yeah, I think there's probably a window in here, and like I'm taking a look out the window with my binoculars now, seeing like what sorts of things are attacking us.
Okay, you can go ahead and make the search move plus your This does sound like reason to me.
Okay.
Although I can, no, I'd say composure because honestly, you're really having to like focus and like look through the mist and it's tough. I'll give you that break at least. You'll get the plus one to this.
Thank
You're
you.
welcome.
Cool. That's a nine. But again, I think I'm going to invoke. I've never seen anything like this before with the mist. I think with just me generally thinking over, like sort of like that bulletin board before, with like the strange sort of hunting club. I think just as a, like an additional, like, do I make the clue or do you make the clue, Alex?
You find plus one clue. I will give you the clue, but then you have to describe what makes it slightly odd.
Okay.
Okay,
So
so you're invoking the extra clue. Not you so you don't
yep.
have the marker box. Gotcha. Cool. Okay. I'll give you the clues first and I'll tell you what the complication is. Because you're looking at through the mists. Let's see. I'm gonna say this. I'm gonna give you a clue. This is not this. You'll get to actually define both of these in different ways. This first clue I'm gonna give you is the one that says a first responder comes up with a clever tactic. So I'll ask you, what do you observe in the mists that inspires some sort of tactic you can take when handling, when dealing with the situation? Something you see out there. You don't have to answer that right now, but just your observations in the mist give you an idea for some kind of clever tactic you can take. So that can be defined when you're actually doing like the rescue, like a question later. But that's something just kind of like you have that idea percolating in your brain. As for you, I'm gonna say that you're actually seeing the volunteers in Dallas getting things from the rover when some of the Knot Vultures attack. And Dallas was very preoccupied securing the items and running inside undercover of this happening. So made it inside safe. But a few of these search volunteers get attacked by these Knot Vultures. This is both your complication, but also the extra clue. You actually see that one of the search volunteers gets stabbed in the abdomen with this proboscis as this thing begins to drink its blood, and just gets knocked to the ground and killed. Another one gets lifted into the air by these Knot Vultures and carried off into the mists alive. Clint Thicket, on the other hand, begins to fucking take action and take some people out, actually starts like fighting back. So your clue is going to be that Clint Thicket has a talent for fighting off. It has a talent for fighting. Clint Thicket is surprisingly good at fighting. That will be the clue you actually either clue you can describe as being an odd detail. So I'll leave them both to your decision as which one is the one you get to add some sort of odd detail to. But those are your two clues. Clint Thicket is a fucking good fighter, and also something you observe something that inspires a clever tactic.
I think what's odd about it is like I see like other people trying to like fight off like the things as well, and Thicket is like literally grabbing like the things and wrenching them down like out of the air, but like for other people like they can't, like it takes like three of them. Like Clint Thicket has like supernatural strength.
And back inside the headquarters, once we've resolved all this here, kind of gearing up, taking these items, loading up with what was brought, the map of the area that David put up, it has marked several locations in town, places of note. Obviously it's been discussed that like clearly people's lives are in danger and y'all have to defend the people here. But David has also flagged like places in town that, if you're going out and about, might be worth checking. Places from the Out of the Woods prompt. So stuff like the deputy sheriff's office, places like where to go? like Grafton Memorial Hospital, O'Sullivan's Bar and Grill, places of significance in the town, various stores. It's Christmas Eve, and so many places are like many shops and stores are closed. But places like the hospital and O'Sullivan's, these places are open because they're open all the time as kind of like local institutions. So there are various buildings and locations in town that I'm reminding you as the keeper, if you want to go to them, we're using them as the locations from the Out of the Woods prompts. So I think we have sufficiently handled the kind of the action, the headquarters, although there are not vultures swarming overhead and more dangers on the way, possibly. So I'd love to hear what everyone is now intending to do. You've geared up, you've discussed some plans. What is happening now? You have 1 hour remaining.
I think Hank's gonna try to. I'm not gonna use it. He's not gonna use his truck. Instead, he's gonna try to go and get some of the snow plows that we. That I think the Forest Service has like some snow big trucks with big snow plows on them, and try to head to the hospital. And I am going to use my move, my X, so that. And this will be from Alex, your perspective, how Wendy is organizing her network of family and friends to give us some kind of clue or asset that I don't even know. She's doing something, and that'll show up. But I don't know who wants to. I'm think I'm going to go to the hospital and start trying to get people to the Hobby Lobby.
So this, let's see. So it gives you plus one clue when she uses her social media research or network of friends and family to dig up something. You're gonna have to confer with her. So this will be the search move. I guess how are you like maybe like this is being done from like the radio inside of your truck as you're driving, you're talking with Wendy. And I because of Dallas's contributions, this kind of localized satellite communication that is being that is aiding you guys, you it allows you to have this, you know, it's affected very heavily by static that's coming through the line, but it is stable enough to just cut through this interference. So you're able to confer with her. I will kind of ask you first to describe how you and Wendy are conversing and sharing information and working together, mostly so I can know what role, well, not, well, what ability to trigger here, because it feels like it's either going to be composure, reason, or presence, depending on the fiction behind how you and Wendy are interacting. So if you could kind of like set that scene for us. You're muted.
You don't have to roll for something that's a plus one clue, do you?
I mean, oh, normally, okay, this, okay. So normally, if it just gives you a clue, I believe it just tells you, you know, you can just use this move to get a clue for free. When it's something says you get plus one clues, like you get an extra clue in addition to what you would get from the move. So if your design intent is here is you just get a clue for free, then there's no move. Okay, gotcha. You just get a clue, no move required. That's what I was confused by.
That needs
Okay.
cleared up.
Okay,
Like
that's why we're
because that's what it's supposed to
playtesting.
be. It wouldn't be Hank rolling his social media and then Wendy saying, "Oh yeah, well I heard on Facebook." Instead, I think it
Totally.
should be she's doing something.
Funny
I get the
enough,
message out to her.
this is actually just a clue that you wrote for this mystery. So it's I'm not sure if this counts as anticlimactic, but it is kind of funny how well this parallels. The clue is a side character has a large network of family and friends. So literally by your move's definition, it's like this is the clue you get. Wendy has a massive network of family and friends. So that is the clue you officially get here to be utilized that she can organize. I love that. That's
She
really
is
fun.
the asset. That's
She
good. Yeah.
is the asset. Wendy is the asset. Fantastic. So Hank is going to the hospital, it sounds like. What is Mike doing?
Mike, yeah, I think Mike is heading to a Sullivan's. Alex, why you keep opening up the missing child?
I am doing something. I am cooking something. Don't you worry. I'm over here in the kitchen cooking. You do
Okay.
your thing.
Okay.
So
It
Mike is
makes
going to
me.
be heading down to O'Sullivan's. Okay.
Yeah.
What
That's.
about Roderick and Dallas?
Dallas is going to the home of the Knox family, Tara Knox and Joshua Knox and the rest of them.
Terrifying. Okay, sure.
What on God's green earth are you doing? Okay. Are there other places that would need to be evacuated? Because that's Roderick is on that
Probably
same.
several, yeah.
Yeah, like one of the another location that would reasonably have people that need to be notified and evacuated that isn't the hospital or O'Sullivan's.
I'll leave that up to you. Yeah, what do you think is a location that would be that Roderick would want to go check out to evacuate civilians?
What are the locations again?
You
Because I
can
can
feel
use.
free to make one up.
Oh, okay. I can make one up. Probably not houses because I feel like Roderick for sure thinks that if you stay inside, you're fine. But like places where the public is, might, if there's like a fire station or police station that's nearby, he would think those are extra bodies that might be helpful
Yeah, there is
because.
a police station that you could go to, yeah.
Yeah, that might be like good to spread that, like, hey, we need to do this thing and to disperse them.
Okay, so you want to go to the police station. Okay, sure. Love that. Very good. Yes, Mike.
Maybe we should take a break because we have like several people going away from their computers.
We had Hank step away for a quick second. I figure, yeah, we can take a quick little five that will count against your time, but we can take a five because I'm evil. So we will be
I was just
right
stepping away
back.
for something real quick. Okay.
Yeah, we'll be right back because I guess we're doing this. All righty. Thank you, Wes. So we have Mike going to O'Sullivan's, we have Roderick going to the police station, we have Dallas going to
The Knoxes.
the Knoxes, that's right. And what is Hank doing?
Taking a snowplow to the hospital.
That's right. Okay, yeah, that's right. So O'Sullivan's hospital. Yes, that's correct. Okay, gotcha. Oh, let's see. Who do we begin with? Start with Mike
Okay.
driving to O'Sullivan's. Don't know who's calling me, but I'm not going to answer. The town is eerily quiet, despite the mists, as you drive through, seeing the abandoned, twinkling, Christmas-bedecked streets and homes that just appear through the mist. Despite the chaos, there is a surprising lack of any visible threats on most of your drive, and you pull up into the parking lot of O'Sullivan's. The lights are on inside and out, but it's hard to see through the windows. It looks like curtains are drawn, but you can see the illumination from glowing from within. There are cars in the parking lot, very few. It is Christmas Eve after all. And as you roll up into the parking lot, you see a car is stopped with its driver's side door open and its hazards are blinking. It looks like it crashed into a lamp post in the parking lot, and just blazing out of the radio echoing to the night, you just hear Feliz Navidad, Feliz Navidad, Feliz Navidad, Prospero Omnia. Just echoing just from the radio as it's blaring as you pull up in the parking lot. What do you do?
I'm going to like pull up alongside, just get out and like check if like anyone's there or if need be just me just turning off the car so like the battery doesn't get worn out.
Make a search move plus your reason.
Okay. Man, I'm rolling decent today. I don't know what's going on, but that is an 8.
An 8. Very good. Your clue No, I'll give you the complication first. kind of like search the area and you approach the vehicle and as you're walking up to it, I want to wish you a m it just blares out in the chorus part and you reach in and you click the radio off, you said. And then you hear something shifting in the back seat of this car. And as you kind of hold your hand there by the knob, you look, and there is this girthy, grotesque, worm-like creature that's just laying in the back like a fleshy duffel bag. And it just slowly rises its head and wriggles slightly. Its head has a little beaked protrusion at the top. And it begins to lazily move to look. Doesn't have eyes, but move its head in your direction as it begins to poke and prod and tap at the vehicle with its beak. Your clue. Let me see how to phrase this. Is a way to move silently in the mist. It seemed that some of these mist creatures were lulled by loud sounds or otherwise did not seem to notice things in the presence of very loud noises. And so the radio turned off. This thing notices you. And it begins to throb its mass forward in your direction very slowly. It's very, very slow. What do you do?
Me as a player am just like alarmed about like the descriptions of this thing.
That's kind of the idea.
I'll tell you off recording more specifically, but I'm just gonna turn the radio back on. Like if it's moving slowly, I'm just gonna yeet.
Yeah, let's have this be the dangerous move. Obviously, I'm gonna have it be plus composure for a steady hand. I feel like it's obvious what you're afraid of happening here is that you're not gonna turn the dial, I would assume, before. Yeah.
The creature's just going to attack because, like, it's just trying to get its aim right. Oh, God.
It's worse than that. You're going to be alive in once it swallowed you for a very long and painful time. It is going to be a bad time for Mike. You ever seen the movie? Nope. Yeah. So go ahead and roll plus composure.
I still have no personal quarters item that I could use because again, all guns. I lost a die.
Oh no.
That's a 9.
A 9. Okay, very good. I'm gonna say that you do get your hand as your hand moves towards the knob. In that exact moment, this large worm monster lunges forward, and the beak snaps down on your forearm. You can take hairline fracture as a condition, but you're able to then turn the radio back on and blare the sound as it then releases your arm and seems to be distracted and no longer sure of where you are. Its head kind of sways to one side than the other. But when that beak just slammed down on your arm for a second, you felt a very sharp tinge of pain run up through your body. So that arm has a nice little hairline fracture in the bone. Nothing too serious, but yeah, that is your condition. What do you do then?
I think like I just close the door to this and I just I cry a little
Feliz
bit.
Navidad, Feliz Navidad. Do you go inside the bar and grill?
Yes, I'm going to go inside the bar and grill.
You rush towards the doors. Dallas, driving to the Knox home.
Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad. Yeah, it's just quietly driving through the streets, high beams on, trying to avoid if there's like any like cars or anything, and just desperately just being like, come on, 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 and then pulling up to it.
I wanna wish you a... And then a spear comes flying through your window shield.
Oh my God.
As coming from the mist, a wooden spear shatters through the glass and juts right, missing your head, and spears into the seat behind you as you swerve. It's the dangerous move. What are you afraid of happening if you lose control of the wheel?
I am afraid that I am going to hit a civilian.
It is worse than that. You're going to roll the car and kill both of you. This is going to be plus vitality.
Plus
No, composure.
vitality.
No, plus
Composure.
composure. And do you have any
Composure.
conditions? No.
No.
All right, so just, yeah, composure.
I am going to use my $2,400 European hiking boots. That they have excellent tread, and allow me to, my feet won't slip or anything when I'm I won't fuck up and hit the accelerator instead of the brake or anything like
I like
that.
that. You can go ahead and roll.
Perfect. Bitches. That is a 6 and a 5 plus 1. That is a 12.
Fantastic. Go ahead and narrate what happens here, and I'll tell you the advantage.
I think there is the I wanna raise you as the spear goes in, and Dallas just goes, oh fuck, and then just like swerves, and the wheel catches the car, the ro the Land Rover. And it goes airborne. It like catches like a manhole cover that was just partially open or something, and the rover goes airborne. And it's just slow motion as Dallas is just, oh, whoa. And you can hear Feliz Navidad playing in slow motion in the background. There's stuff flying, like change and everything in slow motion. And then it hits and rolls down the street and then lands on all four tires, just slowly, like careens on all four tires, and Dallas is just sitting there, and then it just goes back to Feliz Navidad. Dallas checks. Everything's okay. We're all good.
And you see through the mist a tall figure whose arm was posed as if they just threw a spear. And then you see other tall figures perched on top of mailboxes, rooftops in this neighborhood. You hear the slow clicking sound of the wood devils whispering through the night, "Who are you?" And as your eyes are going to go wide at that, you hear a gunshot, and this one of the heads of one of the wood devils snaps as like blood, its brackish blood spatters against one of the Christmas yard decorations, and it slumps to the ground. And you look over, and standing at the front door of the Knox household, Tara Knox is holding a gun, having just taken a shot, and lowers her rifle and looks at you and squints and says, "Get inside, you ostentatious piece of shit." And then, like, loads a bolt. Your clue that you'll get it from the advantage is Tara Knox is really good at firearms, apparently.
Taranox is really good at firearms. Dallas is going to just grab their bag and then run immediately, and probably doing like a Heisman check on one of the fucking wood devils, and just goes, ooh, ooh, gross, gross, gross. Like actually touching it and just goes, oh, gross, 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 gross. And then just like we'll do a Dukes of Hazzard slide over a Prius, and then trip, roll into a shrubbery, roll out the other side, and just run and scramble up on all fours onto the porch and inside.
Sheep slams the door shut behind you, bolts the latch, and grabs you by the arm and drags you through her darkened house to the panic room she had installed ever since her child was kidnapped.
Okay. All right. Yep.
And is taking you downstairs deeper in. Let's cut over to Roderick pulling up outside. Well, driving towards the police station, Let's see here. Oh, I closed my document by accident. Let's see. I'm just looking at something real quick. Hold on. Yeah. Let's paint the scene. As Roderick approaches, what signs, or rather, what do you see that makes the sheriff's apartment look like a war zone?
I think the majority of the w front windows are broken, like blast damage broken.
I'm going to say there's a patrol car off to the side that is is still on fire, and it looks like it, it maybe exploded or something, but it's still burning.
There is a light pole, a telephone pole that is jutting from the center of it. Like it got tossed or something, like a toy, and it's just in the center of the police station sticking out. And there's still like crackling of electricity coming off of it. It's still connected.
You can hear someone crying.
Daniel, you said that one of the vehicles is on fire?
Yes.
Yeah. So, Roderick, as you come pulling up and you see this, how do you feel?
Oh, fuck. That exactly comes out of his mouth.
You can take the condition, oh fuck. And you hear in your back seat.
I turn around.
Hank Jr., you're sitting in the back seat.
Oh, Jesus Christ. What the? How'd you get back there? How did you get back there? God damn it. Oh, okay. Oh, you stay there. You stay there. Stay. Be a good chicken.
You get
Okay.
out of the car, and what do you do?
Well, there's someone cry. I quick survey of the scene, and is someone in the car? Is someone in like the car that's on fire? Where's the crying coming from? Because I want to find a human being.
Your medical your first responder instincts like kick in because you see movement in the vehicle and think, oh my God, someone is burning alive. And as you rush
Absolutely.
the vehicle, something falls out. No, it climbs out and it's not a human being. To your eyes, this is a big ass lizard that is covered in flames. And you remember those fire salamanders that were
Oh,
introduced during the
God
Unsolved?
damn
This
it.
fire salamander climbs out of this vehicle like it was nesting in a cozy bundle of flame and metal and just seems to notice you, and its head tilts. It's illuminated in that way where you can kind of see the veins beneath its skin glowing from the heat inside. And this fire salamander is quite large. And its mouth begins to open as it slowly advances in your direction. And then you see another one climb out of the same wreck. A pair of these giant fire salamanders prowling towards you. What do you do?
Okay, so I do the thing that you do with wild animals where you just kind of like slowly back away, real slow, thinking about either whichever's closer, my car or the front door of that office of the police station. I am backing towards the closest door that is like can separate me from these things.
It is the dangerous move.
Yes.
What are you afraid of happening here?
I'm gonna get burned alive by these things.
Yeah, that's a good answer. Do you want to invoke prior military service now, or you want to hold on to that? Because you can lower dangerous moves to risky moves, but it only once per session. I just figured I'd ask.
Yeah, no, I'm gonna wait for a second. I
Okay,
think things
so
might
it's
get
worse
weird.
than that. Oh, it's, how is it worse than that? Wes, how is it worse than that?
It's worse than that, because you won't realize until the last minute that you're leaving behind civilians that need your help.
That is worse than that. That is worse than that. I love
Oh,
that.
that's
You
good.
can roll plus sensitivity with disadvantage from oh fuck.
Okay. Three. Six.
Roddy Lops. Strangely enough, you knew you were going to die in combat, but not like this. As you back away with the speed that you've never seen a giant lizard exhibit before, these things surge forward and clamp down on your leg immediately. The pain of the bite is vastly overridden by the horrifying pain of the teeth that liquefy flesh and burn into your bones. And these things drag you to the ground. And as you feel your leg catch flame that spreads up the pant legs of your uniform, up to your shirt, fusing skin to nylon. These things drag you back into their burning vehicle nest, dragging you over shards of metal and into the flaming. And as you are being pulled away, you see more of these fire salamanders wandering into the building where you heard those innocent civilians crying. Those cries turn to screams, and the building erupts into flame, knowing in your last moments you have failed several people.
I'm gonna mark a crown.
I would hope you do that, yeah.
Yeah, this isn't this is not No, thank you.
Would you like to narrate the crown now, cinematically, or do you want to hold off on a moment?
I think actually we get that crown in this death scene because it's a
Yeah.
flashback to your fondest memory of working with the US Forest Service, and it's the first time that he got to save someone with the crew that he works with, and it was so deeply satisfying to help this person up and out of this crevice they've fallen in, and treating them and knowing that he had done something unequivocally good. He had bettered the world in a way that no one could argue with, that it was he couldn't second guess because he'd saved someone with everyone else that he actually really ended up caring about. And that not only is he never going to get to do that again, but that he completely failed at the one job he actually liked.
And as it bumps your result up to the next tier, as you're getting dragged towards the vehicle, we see your hand reach out and grab firmly at the edge of the burning wreckage. And with a surge of power and confidence in your duty, your oaths to save lives, you pull yourself out of the grip of these fire signals. You kick one in the face with your hefty boots, and you, before you're dragged too deep in, you pull yourself out of the burning wreckage of this police car and scramble onto the pavement. You are on fire, and you are the right half of your uniform is licking flames up to the side of your face, but you push through it all and throw yourself from danger's way and run into the police station after doing a stop, drop, and roll, slam the door shut, and begin to barricade it behind you. You're going to take the condition third degree burns. You are very badly injured, but you just heroically escape from death and throw yourself into the police station. We cut over to Hank. The hospital. Where's my note? Grafton Memorial Hospital. This is a centrally located hospital in the middle of a residential part of Plymouth. It's about 2 stories tall, but it sprawls with 4 separate wings. The emergency room entrance is front and center. Let's paint the scene. How does the hospital make it evident that Plymouth is a really small town?
There's only one OR.
Typically, when people come into the hospital, it's like taken very serious, like of like, oh no, I've got a headache and I'm going to the hospital. It probably means that something is lodged in their head or something of that nature, because people around here, they always think like they can push on through their daily chores and whatnot. Pretty hardworking folks around here.
The building is old, and that it's clearly not been updated for decades and decades. The signage is kind of still worn away. Like it's not, nothing's been updated. And the parking lot is much smaller than one would think a hospital should have.
And I'm going to add to the parking lot. There's a lot of pickup trucks, commercial vehicles. Yeah, it looks more like the parking lot of, say, Walmart than a hospital.
Hank, you pull up, you see the hospital, and its lights on from within, but disconcertingly, like the tide of the ocean lapping against the shore, there is a thick, dense cloud of these snaking tendrils of fog pushing up against the front exterior of the windows of the sliding doors that open to the ER, which have been put on lockdown, you would assume. You see frightened people inside, doctors, civilians, police officers inside, as this thick bank of fog is trying to enter the building, its tendrils probing at the glass, trying to find purchase. Like a mass of snakes just waiting has pooled here. What do you do?
When he used to work as a forester for the National Forest Service, they used dynamite to blow rocks up and for trails or and things like that. So we see Hank putting a blasting cap in one of Dallas Barton Moss's dynamite sticks, and he also picked up a World War II Thompson submachine gun, which he doesn't know yet whether or not it's fully automatic or not, but it does have a button that says auto. So he's coming out of the truck, and he's going to try to hurl one of those sticks of dynamite off to the side of the hospital, but near kind of the center mass of those tendrils to see what it does.
That's quite dangerous. What are you afraid of happening here?
Well, he can't remember. Did they use quarter stick dynamite or the full dot? Like he's trying to do the math of how much dynamite is in this stick that he's throwing. I'm afraid that it'll do a lot of damage to the hospital as well.
Yeah, it's worse than that. That's going to do a lot of damage to the people inside. You can roll plus sensitivity because we're dealing with the supernatural, so we gotta. You do have disadvantage from, I'll say, impatient. You don't want to be impatient while you're lighting dynamite.
I will mark the dynamite
Mitigate, yep.
to get it down to 2 dice plus, I think, 0. I don't think I have any sensitivity. Now I've got a 6 and a 3, so a 9.
A 9. Very good. The explosion goes off. It's much louder in the quiet gloom of the misty night, and ripples through the air. The fog bursts out from the shockwave, bits of asphalt and dirt fly up through the air, showering down on you, even from your position. And the mist blew open and is beginning to recoalesce and form. And it does begin to move away from the hospital, and it seems to have reacted to that. The problem is, it's now directing its full attention on you, Hank. That's your complication. The mist is now looking directly at you, and it's coming right at you. What do you do?
Get back in the truck. Get back in the truck and the snowplow, keeping it between, like going in reverse and keeping the snowplow between me and them.
Where are you intending to go?
Like, just drive around a little bit.
Okay. Well, this is definitely another dangerous move, Hank. Another one for sure. This will be plus, this one I'll say is plus composure because you're doing some maneuvering at the wheel. What are you afraid of happening?
I'm afraid I will wreck the truck because I'm going in reverse.
It's worse than that. The tendrils of mist are going to get inside the truck.
Okay.
You have disadvantage.
Yeah, let me see what I can use. I'm going to try to use, because I'm thinking this truck has like, it carries like salt and grit for the road. So he can't actually see through the rearview mirror very well. And so using the side mirrors is hard. So he's going to kind of lean out with a headlamp on and try to like look behind him instead
I
of
like
using.
that. You can mark it,
So
yeah.
I'll mark that.
Incredible.
Why do we keep dropping dice today? I'm just rolling two. So that gives me a three.
Sergeant Hank McBride.
Well, four plus the plus composure.
Sergeant Hank McBride, you reverse, headlamp out, thinking this reminds you of a movie you've seen, an old action film probably. And then seconds into it, you slam the back of your truck into one of the parking lot's light poles, denting the back, coming lurching to a stop, and with your head out the window, the tendrils immediately begin to snake and pry themselves through that opening and wrapping around you. Despite their intangibility, you feel that cold, sucking dampness siphoning away parts of your very being. Siphoning away memories, skills, the memories of your life with Wendy, the memories of your children, your grandchildren, your years working in the Forest Service, saving lives, sharing coffee with your various teammates, talking about the old days themselves, when you were a young man, when things were better, memories all fading into the darkness between worlds. And when the mist has had its way with Sergeant Hank McBride and they clear from the vehicle, there's no one there. Hank McBride has disappeared.
I'm going to mark the crown peaks of truth and become obsessed with the mountain.
What? I'm gonna ask you an inverse of the question these tendrils did the first time. We've already established what they're siphoning away. What memory do you grab onto as a life preserver to haul you back to the world?
Must get to Pensacola, Florida.
In that moment, you are able to haul yourself from the vehicle You take Obsessed with the Mountain and you are able to put the gear back in forward and drive, grinding the plow against the asphalt, breaking through some vehicles. You're able to route the fog. Is your intention, I should ask, to get inside the hospital or just keep it away from the hospital?
I was hoping to go to the hospital.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure enough, through some slick maneuverings, through the haze of your own mind at this point, the mud that you feel like your brain has turned into, you're able to act and run up to the building, having routed the fog long enough to buy you the time to outrun it and get inside where they push the doors open and you race inside and then collapse. We cut over now to our last kind of round. We are the last 10 minutes of our timer here. I want to see Mike when you enter O'Sullivan's. Let's paint the scene. How has the Christmas Eve night crew barricaded themselves inside the bar and grill?
Several tables have been turned over. Like there is a sort of Les Miserables style of like barricade, as though they're like they can't really sturdy against the door, just in case like there's more people out there, but they're prepared for any sorts of monstrosities in here.
The jukebox, which is still playing Feliz Navidad. It's pressed up against one of the windows, like the bigger windows, to kind of block it. And it is just jarringly just playing Christmas music on loop.
They've made some weapons out of sharpened broomsticks and mop sticks.
The neon lights have been set up from the walls on the outside to try to help cut through this mist if they can see where they're coming from.
You manage to push through part of the barricade on the front door and climb over it, tripping and stumbling, but get it pushed behind you as several of the people in here, the bartender, a couple of the wait staff, and one regular with a long beard and a denim hat that you've always seen in here and you've never thought to ask his name, but he's been a part of this building for as long as you can remember. Haft weapons at you, but then lower them when they see you. And the bartender just goes, Ranger Hester's shit, runs over to help you, like close the door back behind you, and like barricade it. What are you doing, Mike?
What's this sort of situation out here? Like,
Everything's pretty fucking bad. Points to the outside.
Yeah, it's like. Like, has anybody been hurt or anything?
Several people were. They tried to run, and they were taken. Some things came out and grabbed them, and oh God, the screams.
What took them?
I didn't see. I saw them get. They were there, and then they weren't. And I've seen a lot of things tonight. We all have. Everyone looks a little shell-shocked.
I'm going to need details. The people up on the mountain, they're working hard on figuring this out. This is throughout like the entire town. We just got to know like what's going on.
You can do the search move plus your presence, Mike.
I really wish I had more than just guns. I find out jack shit. That is a three.
Three. The bartender says, I told you I didn't see anything. One of the waitresses just goes, I saw something. I saw something I couldn't forget. She like tentatively like stands up for where she was pulling, clutching her broom weapon. She says, I saw the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life, Ranger Hesters. Lots of us have. Because, you see, this night is more special than you or really any of us could have ever imagined. We've been working a long time to bring him into this world and his world into our world. Because you see, Michael Whately.
Oh, fuck.
He waits in the woods. He watches in the water.
He watches in the water.
He wills the world to warp. He wills the world. And she runs her improvised weapon through the torso of the bartender, impaling him in a spatter of blood, and then rips it through as she begins to cackle madly and says, "The time has come! The mountains have arrived!" And she's going to attack you. What do you do?
Oh, God. I think I'm going to pull out my gun now. Because, like, God, I really want to know why people car like, I know, like, because, like, technically I'm a Whately, but why? Why do people know about Whately's and I don't know?
Go ahead and roll the dangerous move. This is going to be plus your... I'm going to say composure for a quick draw shot. Disadvantage because your arm fucking hurts from that hairline fracture. But yeah, what are you afraid of happening here?
Like, again, I'm not being quick enough and I'm just going to get stabbed. But also, like, I'm not going to learn anything.
Yeah, it's worse than that because she is really going to kill some people in front of you.
Okay.
And you'll be alive, but other people are going to be dead as this cultist raves madly.
Yeah, I'm going to mark my service revolver because this is very close combat. So, flat roll! Let's go! Mike, shoot! That is a 7.
A 7. All right, very good. We'll get back to that. Dallas. Tara Knox drags you into her household. The Knoxes are here. Tara's husband, Joshua's sister, her name I'm forgetting at the exact moment. But Tara kind of escorts you down into their little panic room basement and locks it behind you. And she says, "So what the hell are you doing here? And what is happening?"
Merry Christmas.
Don't give me that horse shit.
Okay. Well, I
and you see that, like, Josh has mommy swearing, and she says, and she just looks at Josh and then looks back at you with a level gaze.
Like, looks at Josh, he goes, I just wanted to come. There's a lot of bad stuff happening out there, and I just wanted to make sure that y'all are okay."
Okay. We are the farthest from okay. But comparatively, we're okay. But Josh says, he looks up at you and says, "It's them, isn't it?"
"Yeah, buddy, that's..."
They came back for me?
"Well, yeah. And that's why I'm here, to make sure to get you and the rest of your family back to the NFS headquarters. We're going to make sure that you're all locked down tight and everything like that."
"Back to NFS headquarters, because the last time you took us to an outpost you wanted us to go to worked out so well."
"I wasn't there."
"How does that make the difference, Dallas Hardmoss? Look me in the eyes right now and tell me how a venture capitalist piece of shit like yourself, who has done nothing but suck the blood from our town for the last several years while flaunting their wealth as if it was giving them some kind of purpose in life, look me in my fucking eyes, not as a mother, not as a member of Plymouth, as a fellow fucking human being. Convince me that I am safer with you. Not just safer, but my family is in fact going to be okay."
"Because somebody has to do something. Somebody has to do something. Not even with weird people that are trying to take your son or green mist or anything, but somebody has to do something. Somebody has to take the reins and steer this fucking carriage back to where it needs to go and off of this fucking cliff that we're on. I'm sorry, Joshua, swearing. And then takes like a $20 bill and slams it on the ground for like a swear jar. Somebody has to do something. And there's a bunch of other a-holes like me out there that just take and they take and they take. But I am taking and I am doing something with it. I am taking and I am giving back. I am taking things that are broken, that are in disrepair, and they are broken, and I am trying to fix them. Miss Knox, Mrs. Knox, Mr. Knox, Joshua. Chrissy?
Nope. She's just like, nope.
Oh,
But she just kind of gives you like a half-hearted thumbs up.
yeah. Thank you. Me and the people I work with, the brave people I work with, are trying to do something. So it's not just me, it's others. And I think, Tara, you can help us out too. Also, it wouldn't be Christmas unless I delivered a present.
She like squints her eyes at you, but then looks at back at the family and says, "Come on, Knoxes. We're getting out of here. You better be right about this, Dallas Bartmoss."
I rarely am wrong. Also, Merry Christmas. I'm going to hand an envelope. Over a red envelope that has
She
like golden Sharpie on it. This is the
looks
Noxus.
at you like, "Really? A Christmas card right now?"
Yeah.
She opens it and looks inside.
It's the deed to her house that she's renting.
She tucks it away and wordlessly looks at you as if she's not certain what to respond with, but she just walks upstairs, followed by her family. You go as well. As you're walking through the household, she says, "Well, you rolled your car on the way here, so we're going to take something a bit sturdier than your shitty little Range Rover." And she goes into the garage, and in all of its glory, with a choir of angels singing on high, just a suburban mom van, sturdier than anything you can find on this earth, a SUV fit for driving the kids to soccer practice. The Bart Moss and the Knoxes hit the road.
Shout out 2005 Honda Odyssey with the automatic doors and the DVD player in the back of the headsets.
Roddy Lops, as we resolve the last couple of actions before we must go into our answering. Badly wounded. What do you do when you enter the ruins of the sheriff's station?
I try to find the people.
Make the search move plus your reason at a disadvantage.
Shit, okay. Plus my reason. Gotta look at my reason.
Zero.
Zero. Yeah, okay. Six.
Six.
Motherfucker.
What's the most gutting thing you see in here?
Let me look at our.
Yeah, it's a safety. Yeah,
I'm gonna
exactly.
look at
Yeah.
the safety tab real quick, like,
Please do.
okay. I think it's a couple that are clearly non-police officers. They're clearly civilians that had come in here and barricaded themselves. And they are both charred corpses clinging to each other.
The source of the crying is a single desk television playing It's a Wonderful Life. There were no survivors in here. You just heard a television playing a Christmas special.
That I think he stands there for a good solid like 30 seconds, scanning the room, hoping that he was incorrect. Maybe there's movement, but it's just desolate and empty. And just says, God damn it. And takes a breath. And as fast as he can move with his various injuries, goes to scramble back out to his car, tear gas canister in hand that Dallas so lovingly gave him to maybe be able to get to the car before those fucking salamanders try to eat me again.
Mike, tackling madly, this woman, after dropping the bartender, lunges at you. And despite the pain shooting up your arm, you fire, putting one between her eyes. Her head snaps back, spraying blood against the menu behind the bar. She collapses in a heap, eyes staring vacantly up at the ceiling. Her breath wheezing out a final laugh. You may take the condition marked by the cult. Hank, inside the hospital, a woman who you know quite well. This is Dr. Marge Trowbridge. She's the doctor here at the ER. You've had some dealings with her before. She's in her early 40s, wearing purple scrubs over under her white lab coat, a little stethoscope around her neck. She's been talking to the various nurses and helping people out who are injured. Her breath kind of smells faintly of cigarette smoke as she welcomes you inside and she says, "Well, you made quite a bit of noise out there, Sergeant McBride. Any injuries? You look a little vacant." She gets a pen light down like Tom Shines. "Can you follow the light with your eyes? Yeah. Okay, good, good. Can you speak?"
Yeah. We gotta evacuate to the Hobby Lobby.
Nurse, I think he has a concussion.
I think we see a scene. I think we see her like checking him out and giving him some like beta blockers or something. Because I want to get rid of that condition, impatient, and maybe, yeah. I think that's all she. I don't think she would give me pain pills because
Have you heard of the
he's not hurt. But he does seem kind of like kind of like rattled and out of it. So I think she gives him like some beta blockers to help get rid of she's thinking anxiety, but I'm thinking his impatient.
How do you clear the condition?
Oh, to at the hospital.
I thought, oh, that's right. Oh, because it has a function. Oh my God, I forgot about that. Yeah, you're right. You wrote this game. Thank you for reminding me. Yeah, you can use the hospital to mark to heal conditions. That's right. Fuck, you're smart.
I think we've used it once for Roddy's arm. We only did it three times, so this would be the
This
second,
is
I
the
think.
second. Yeah, I forgot about that. Okay, yeah, very smart. Forgot about that entirely. Hell yeah. Okay. Well, with that, time is up. It is time to answer the question. You did a good job. You collected eight clues, putting this at a flat roll. You worked well under pressure in the face of danger. Let's review what we have. Some sort of invisible barrier, perhaps, or something at least, is preventing the mists from entering the town's Hobby Lobby. The satellite facilitates communication within the mist zone. Hank got a cache of weapons and ammo. Mike had observed some kind of clever tactic that we will see in play here. Clint Thicket has a talent for fighting and possibly even some supernatural strength. Wendy and her network. Loud noises seem to override the senses of most of the mist creatures. And Terranox is really good at firearms. The question is then, how do we protect the town from the dangers in the mist? Begin.
I like the idea of us trying to get as many people as we can to the Hobby Lobby and using all this equipment to do that.
Absolutely. And I like the that we could maybe utilize like blasting like probably whatever's on the radio, Christmas music or what have you, to clear paths, to help clear paths.
So when I marked that last crown, it unlocked another. I don't have that firearm anymore. But now I have like a cache of the good stuff, and I think for this it would be like broadcast equipment that we use for like or megaphones or something that we use, and so everybody can have like I think those megaphones are probably the best thing, and so he just dumps that out of a duffel bag. So that can help us with the sound.
I think with like the clever tactic I realize is like some of the creatures they were coming out of like the tree line and like luring people away, like separating them and that sort of thing. So like I think with like the idea of what like we can move silently, we could do like the tactic back at them.
I think also having Tara and Clint, so having them protect people that were moving. So we have satellite that facilitates communication within the mist zone. So we're able to figure out where the biggest cropping of mist creatures are, like where they're gathered and everything like that. Utilizing the radio with the Christmas music, distract them away from the Hobby Lobby. And then have Clint and Tara escort people to the Hobby Lobby, utilizing that way to move silently through the mist. And then having Wendy's massive networks of friends and family from the outside start collecting like non-perishable items, things like that, and start amassing them to be able to send them to the Hobby Lobby for people if they need to get like medical treatment or something like that.
Why the Hobby Lobby?
I have
What you have an idea for like what's going on with the Hobby Lobby? Because I'm very curious.
it's a very self-indulgent idea.
Let's hear it.
Well, I've been thinking about like why the Whateleys in Plymouth? Like why presumably why are we congregating here? Why does everybody know what Whateley is? Well, there's only one reasonable answer is the Whateleys had effectively one branch of the family set had set a base here effectively. And I think the Hobby Lobby has effectively, as Hobby Lobby is known to do, collect the local relics in the area through less than savory means, and I think that they have a camera in their midst. Just very interesting. They're not really
Oh.
sure where that came from, but it's
Oh. We'll have to explain to B later, but
yeah.
oh. Understood.
So yeah, self-indulgent.
Very self-indulgent. I'm always here for an appearance of the Whateley camera. It's the CFB deck of many things. That's what it is, honest. It's damn, that's okay, yeah.
I'm glad it's not the corset.
Yeah, for real. For real.
Oh my God, the corset, and I'll talk about it
Yeah, we'll
later,
talk about it
but
later. Okay. Any other things on that? Because that uses all eight, unless there are any other details or spins people wanted to throw into those, or are we all in
well,
agreement?
how do we use the cache of weapons and ammo?
Distractions
Just
in
passing them
fighting.
out.
Oh
Pass
yeah, I
them
guess
out.
yeah, we're just passing them
Yeah.
out.
It's
Wendy
just as a
definitely gets
defense
more.
tool. Yeah. Yeah. Anything else? Because I think that all makes sense to me. So here's the deal with this role, right? You are not, this is not like another scenario where if you miss, you have to then get more clues, then try again. This mystery ends with this role. So if you don't have a solution, if you don't get the result you like, the only way to make it better is to mark crowns, to bump it up. You don't get a second chance at finding new information. This is going to be a flat roll. 2d6 plus nothing to determine the fate of Plymouth. Who wants to roll?
I volunteer, Hank.
Don't want to roll it. I'll roll it. I don't want to roll it.
Hank, do you want to split the roll with me just to make things
Ooh, you
because
each roll one.
oh, that's good.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Let's go.
I got a four.
I got five.
It's a nine.
Let's go together.
On a 7 to 9, the fight's going to be tough and it will trigger some dangerous moves. I will say that you're all in really bad shape and there are many crowns that have already been spent. If everyone spends a crown now to bump it up to a 10, there are no rolls left to be made. Everyone just narrates the success. You will there, but if you take the nine, there will be dangerous rolls made. You are in more risk, and that could go your way. It could not. I leave it in your hands. Do you wish to guarantee one crown spent for each of you for a resolution, or leave it as is with the possibility that people might have to mark crowns based on the outcomes of dangerous rolls? It's up to you.
I am wealthy in crowns compared to everybody else, so I do not mind marking one to bump it up. But I also do not mind rolling with it and seeing what happens. Because I am also wealthy in crowns, much like my character that I'm playing, there is a representation that I am privileged more than the rest of you due to wealth.
Oh my God.
I'm fine with spinning a crown.
Yeah, I mean, I've got one more crown of the forest left. God, Jesus. I'm down with either. I think either would be interesting. So, because either's going to move it along in a way that makes it more dangerous for us in the end.
Oh, I have terrible thoughts. But just about where people are in terms of crowns and whatnot. I'm looking at you, Hank McBride. But I'm good with spending a crown because I think this would be pretty thematic if a particular crown got spent right now.
You all want to spend crowns to bump it up? I'm going to do this in order. Roderick, which crown do you mark?
You know what? I think it would be the most thematic to mark the ancient cliff.
Very good. Mike Waitley, what crown do you mark?
The ancient cliff, of course.
Sergeant Hank McBride, which do you mark?
Think this would be a good time for Hank to mark the mountain.
And Dallas Bartmoss.
The ancient cliff.
I would like everybody to narrate the final defense of Plymouth on the night of Verdigris, pursuing your plan in a straightforward and decisive way. Narrate your great success. Narrate what happens. Each of you contribute details. Daniel, I ask that you go last. And as part of your narration, because you marked the mountain, describe how we lose Sergeant Hank McBride. Whoever wishes to begin may do so.
I think I'll kick off because it's very straightforward. And Dallas knows exactly where Dallas is useful in things of this. Dallas is not a fighter. Dallas is not a scrapper. Dallas is not an on-the-ground person. Dallas coordinates communications, working with the satellite, working with other people on radios, making sure that they are tuned in and everything. Dallas is also having people that, if they are willing, not forcing them to hand over their phones to help boost the signal, to help coordinate these things, to help to essentially taking multiple mini computers and making one big supercomputer is the same way that you can take a bunch of phones and boost the signal and make one big phone broadcast. So everybody just has radios instead. The thing that while Dallas is trying to be a better person is still a shitty person is that Dallas is also taking all of these people's phones and that are allowing to be able to use these phones and is copying every single photo, every single video, every single message that is mentioning what happened tonight and is compiling them into a folder to put towards Project Prism because this is absolutely 100% proof that things are happening and things can get pushed for, not for Project Prism, but for the Bart Moss Data Solutions, the Terra Dome, the spire that's going to be on the top of White Mountain that is going to be a representation of moving the world forward to a cleaner, more efficient, and a brighter future for Earth. And feels that slight twinge of guilt in the back of their head, but it playing over in their head, Terra Nox saying you're just a venture capitalist that is sucking our town dry and using it for your own means, and continuously being like, no, somebody has to make it better. I'm making it better. And is being in their own brain rewarded for that because we are seeing the communications and like the head of comms and everything like that. There's not a lot of people getting injured. There's not a lot of people like getting like hurt. They're actually finding more people that like were passing through town or something, and they're getting them to Hobby Lobby. And Dallas is starting to be have that slight moment of being like, well, even if Bart Moss doesn't work out, I could just hand the keys over to the company and just do this. This is something that I'm good at. But then sees a video clip or a photo and is like, that would be really good, and sends it over.
I think we see a scene of Mike Hester's arriving at the Hobby Lobby with people from the bar. I think the bartender, despite just effectively being stabbed with a spear, is all right, just not doing so hot. I think he's been bandaged up as best as Mike is capable. He's hoping that Roderick gets there soon, but he's just I think he's still in sort of investigation mode, trying to figure out what's the cause of all of this. Why is Hobby Lobby safe from everything? And I think he comes sort of into the space where the Hobby Lobby just has a bunch of relics of whatnot and storage and whatnot, and then he sees it. The camera. He is drawn to it. It is a very old camera, but sort of one of the first early days of wet plate technology, from 19th century, sort of Victorian era. And I think he sees sort of a sort of an engraving of a name on it, Whately. The mystery deepens. And he thinks to himself, after all this is over, I could just take this for myself, couldn't I? No one would mind if something like this were to go missing, would they? I think that's where I'm going to end my scene.
Roderick has set up a triage in the Hobby Lobby, the front area. And the third degree burns is kind of weirdly enough, he almost feels lucky because he can't feel it right now. All of the nerve endings have been scorched off and it just feels numb. And so he can focus on everybody they've brought in that's injured in ways he's never seen. And he's seen some really, really bad shit, but he's never seen some of these kinds of injuries. And so we set up a triage with hopefully other medical personnel that have come into the Hobby Lobby, even somebody with just a Red Cross CPR certification. He'll take that. And he's treating these people and quietly watching the front doors for not for monsters, but for the people he cares about to come in. He's waiting for Mike and Alice and Hank and his mom. And he knows he can't leave and go find them because that's not the plan. This is the plan, and this is how the most people get saved, no matter what sort of personal sacrifices anybody makes tonight.
So as we're defending the Hobby Lobby, I just like saying Hobby Lobby. The music is working, but what people starting to say, people starting to come and tell Hank and the others is it's like there's like a big like mass of those not vultures, like almost like a swirling like a tornado, slowly coming closer. And so we see Hank with the radio, and he's leaving, and he's got keys to a truck. His son Jason brought a White Mountain heating fuel and propane truck and for the generator at Hobby Lobby in case we needed Hobby Lobby powered up. And so Hank's driving, he's getting the radio out. And so my a few weeks from retirement move, when I mark the crown of the mountain, it opens. I get rid of break out the good stuff, and I pick up one last favor from an ex. So I'm given like as I'm talking to Wendy on this on the radio, staticky radio, it says, give your ex detailed instructions for old time's sakes. No matter what the task is, they will make sure it happens. And so we hear Hank telling Wendy, you got to promise me to get the kids, and you got to move. You don't have to go to Florida, but you got to move away from this mountain. You got to get out of here. And she's like, but Hank, let's don't talk about that now. We're just trying to keep the back door secure, whatever. And so just promise me. And Hank accelerates with the propane truck and drives it like right into the mass of these knot vultures. They're hitting the side of it, and then we see a close up of the fuse of the blasting cap of the dynamite, and it just explodes. A full tank of propane explodes, and windows are broken out from around the Hobby Lobby and the shopping center where we are. And the birds, so a lot of the birds are just incinerated. The wreckage of the truck just kind of bounces off to the side. And for a brief moment, the green mist is cleared from that area of the explosion.
Through the flames, the mist seems to dim, recede, and things go quiet. A calm in the storm, a collective breath held, some choking down sobs. But as people expect a next wave for things to get worse, dawn breaks over Plymouth on Christmas morning, burning away the green fog. The mists begin to recede as if beckoned back to wherever they came from, snaking back along the asphalt into the trees, into the deeper woods. Into the places that are thin enough for them to have arrived. The night of verdigris has ended. And as those mists pull back in the deep woods, snaking back to a patina-coated boulder where a small rift cut open by an ornate metal dagger first began to help them seep in as they recede through that hole. It begins to close slightly, and then a hand grabs the edge of it, and someone hastily pulls themselves through the crack in reality, hitting the door or hitting the ground with a heavy thump. And this figure stands up, looks at the sky, and is free for now. And that is the end of our session. Let's take a quick 5-minute break. And when we come back, we will do end of session, stars and wishes, and talk about what comes next. All right. End of session questions, everybody, minus Hank. Roderick, you did resolve a rescue, so you get 1 point there. I see that your track is filled. Did you get the advance last time? And that
I did.
was.
Oh my God, and I didn't pick one.
Oh my God.
So I'm a goober, but not that it would have helped anything really.
Yeah, you get an advance, hey, for free anyway, because you tried it
Hell
last time. So,
yeah.
hey,
Awesome, then I'll be
did
one.
you talk about one of your many certifications?
No.
Did you share any medical horror stories?
Not directly.
Did you experience an echo in the time? I'm going to count Feliz Navidad as an echo in time for just for the sake of that. Was
Yes!
people latched on, people latched
Yeah!
onto that, and it was really amusing to me.
Yes, we
So
all
you
get
can
Feliz
say,
Navidad.
yeah, so you can get 2 points of XP, and you got a free advance anyway. So go ahead and pick
Hell
something.
yeah.
Mike, did you primarily talk in single word phrases?
No.
Did you reluctantly describe something odd you've seen?
Yes, what happened at the library? I did
Yeah.
not describe it.
Very true. And you get 3 points of XP. And you get another advance. Hell yeah. And
I think I'm going to need to write a custom move,
it's about
especially.
time because, oh, you took the camera, didn't you?
Yeah.
Fuck. Oh, fuck.
We've got full
We
Crash
are.
Bandicoot over here. You're
We
taking
are.
a threat from another CFB game and turning it into a move for this CFB. Jesus.
So, okay, cool. Anyway, Dallas, did you flaunt your wealth?
Yes, I did. Routinely.
Did you impress the others with your wilderness skills?
Did I?
I don't think there were any. I mean, well, unless you count the armory in your Range Rover as wilderness skills,
Be
but that
prepared. That is this Boy Scout motto.
I would say actually that Roderick was impressed that not only were they prepared, but they managed to like think about getting cover and like this whole thing worked out, and we had like World War II guns and shit. Like that, I think, I don't know if it's wilderness, but they impressed
impressed
Roderick.
with the preparations. I was, yeah.
By the way, if you did not use your World War II era firearm, it does go away. But you do get to keep the other item if you
Cool.
didn't use it. So I still have a tripmire and landmine, but I do not have mine, which is a Krumlauf, the one that I chose. Do y'all know what a Krumlauf was? It's a Steyr 44 automatic rifle that the Germans developed, except it had a curved barrel, so you could shoot around corners. And it was effective, but only at short ranges because when it hit the curve in the barrel, it would split bullets in half. So you would fire, essentially, there would be two projectiles that would come out. So it had like an adverse side effect is that it could not shoot long range. It could only shoot short range, but you're shooting around a corner, so you don't need it for long range. But it would shoot two halves of a bullet, so essentially two projectiles.
Damn.
Yeah, I have such a fondness for weird things that were
Yeah.
developed in wartime that were like, this has no use whatsoever, and we wasted money on it and everything.
Incredible. Okay.
So that means I
You
got
get four.
four. Okay, sick.
Yeah, you advance as
One,
well.
two, three, four. Okay, I'm one
Oh.
away from an advance
I thought you
because
had. Oh,
I
gotcha.
already marked my resolve a rescue one. So.
Gotcha. Understood.
Yeah.
Roderick, what'd you grab?
For moves?
Yeah, because you I see you took an
Yeah.
advance.
Private stash. We're self-medicating, and maybe others.
Oh, fantastic. I love that. Awesome. Then let's go to Stars and Wishes, gang.
I have some. This is this is for Alex and the rest of you wouldn't know this, I don't think, but star for Alex in this Knight of Verdigris by putting in all these vignettes. They're not included. Those are just things that Alex was coming up with, and so and another star for bringing in things from the past to include in the Knight of Verdigris, like Clint. The David and Dallas meeting, which I don't think we've had much of that, but having David and Bargo asking if did you prepare adequately for the winter, that was good. For Wes, star for oxidizing magnetic overflow, oxidizing magmatic overflow as a possible, and in guessing, Chrissy, trying to guess Chrissy. I got a star for I thought the poacher contraband in the shed was a good idea for Alex. The war, star for the World War II gear, that was good from Wes. For B, the whole Roddy and the fire salamander scene. And you said the tear gas that Dallas so lovingly gave me. I guess you guys were engaged. Because he gave you And for chaotic, I'm really a star for Mike having this just kind of a matter of fact. Well, it's the end times, so that's what we're dealing with. I had another one for Mike for Mike there at the end, but I didn't write it down. Oh, just the Whately camera. Yeah, star for that.
Stars for Mike Whately Hester's. Are you gonna start hyphenating your name, or are you going? We don't know. Like, now that you are have the Whately camera, is it full on? We have to get the skinny on that. This is a thing that I particularly like about you, Chaotic, is that you fully push your characters into the narrative. You are, and you now it's been interesting seeing you build this character and seeing how like this character has grown and how you're building and adding to it and everything. Your crowns are great, always on point, and they tie in perfectly with this idea of the character that I have in my head is incorrect. But I don't mind it being incorrect. It's one of those things of like I'm watching a TV show and I'm reading the subreddit at the end of every episode to see the theories, and the theories turn out wrong. It was like, watching Game of Thrones in the prime, the heyday, and reading the subreddit at the same time. But I'm wrong every time, and I'm so happy to be wrong because you're doing it better than what I expected. So kudos to you on that. Kudos to Alex for the pacing of this thing. The layer four is a beast for any game. Layer four is a beast, depending on what you do. That and it's that's stars to you as well, Daniel. It's hard to design one. I know because I had to design one. And it sucks, but it's also like when you get it and it works. It works really well. And this a seat like Assault on Precinct 13, The Mist, like it is it Rio Bravo's the Siege one? Siege Western? Yeah, like Rio Bravo, like I can see it in my head, except it's like snowing. It's like it's 30 days of night out there, like it's great, like fantastic stuff. It was tense, it was horrific. I love it when horror movies use happy, peppy songs in moments of sheer terror. I cannot listen to the song Do You Hear What I Hear without shitting my pants because of Gremlins. And like using like Feliz Navidad in the back of like the car door is ripped open, there's debris around it, and it's turned on, it's idling, and you can just hear Feliz Navidad playing. terrifying, horrific imagery. I love it. That is one of those things that I'm like, oh my God, I love Christmas and winter so much. Because and it's badly done almost every time it does it, but you did it great. Ronnie Lops, Bean R. This is a wish. I want to know more about Roderick. We're getting morsels, but I want more. I think with Private Stash, we're going to learn more. But the stuff that you're doing with Roderick is such a character that's hard to do. That is a direct and like to the point, and like you're doing something where it's like Roderick does have an interesting backstory and does have like interesting characterization, but it's not twisty. It is like it is straightforward, it is to the point, and it is entertaining, and it is good. And people try to do that with characters so often and they fail. And like that's up there with characters like from The Expanse, what's his name?
Which one?
The part of the Rosencrantz, the not the Rosencrantz,
The
the
Rosinante?
Rosinante, the Rosinante,
Which one?
the
Amos?
Amos. Like his backstory is not twisty. His characterization is not twisty. It's straightforward, it's to the point, and it's a really good fucking character that sticks with you. And that's what Roderick is. It's really good. Daniel, fucking I hate to see you go, but I love to watch you leave. Fucking Hank McBride, fucking see you, space cowboy, up there. I hope you're in that big Pensacola, the white sands of Pensacola in the sky. God, enjoy the arcade right on the strip, everything like that. You're gonna have a great time. Pensacola is great, heartbreaking but amazing. And I feel like we just got to know you. Like, it feels so quick, but 10 sessions. Damn, you really did Doctor Strangelove that character into the great beyond. You just rode that bomb all the way. That you rode that propane truck all the way to the ground with grace, with honor and dignity and style. Kudos to you, sir. I cannot wait to see what horror monster you have wrought for us in this new character. How are you going to challenge us, and I'm pretty sure make me cry. So thank you so much. Those are my stars, my wishes. I want more Roddy. I need a scene, the first scene without Hank, and it's just the trio. I'm gone, I'm back. The first, tr it's gonna rip me to sunders. I just know it. So I have to emotionally prepare myself for it.
You better believe we're starting next session with his funeral.
Thank
Yeah.
God. That was like my first wish. I was like, we gotta address this
I thought
because
it was gonna
Hank
be like
deserves it.
6 months later.
That's the thing, is like getting the funeral or just post-funeral in the office or 6 months later. Any of them would be devastating.
Devastating.
5 years later. No.
Oh my God.
We're all dead. No.
Dallas has a goatee now. But yeah, no, that's me. Fantastic stuff.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Yeah, that was my first wishes of what, like, I am so excited's the wrong word because I am probably going to cry as a player about Hank's sort of departure from this realm. Being addressed in character, because oh my gosh, Daniel, you have crafted such a wonderful character. I am madly in love with Hank's characterization, his backstory, how Wendy and his relationship was handled felt so real. And that's a star for you and Alex for making this. I was instantly invested from like the first word. I was invested with in Hank and Wendy and Hank's whole entire thing. And even though you definitely speed ran this man into the mountain in a propane tank, I it felt very like well paced. It felt right. It felt very poetic. And I really love this sacrificial hero thing that Hank got to go out on. It was really beautiful, really wonderfully done. I am just so excited to see what you do with this new character. I'm just like, I don't even know what this playbook is like. I have not looked. I'm not gonna look. It's a surprise. I'm excited for the surprise. Oh man. And speaking of surprises, chaotic. Wow, what I really have to agree with Wes about this. Like, I'm always wrong about what I think Mike is going to do. Not that, because like he's so intro, like I have a general idea of how Mike is, but he always like his characterization, his character development has taken a direction that I wouldn't have thought to do, and it is delicious. And it has really enriched this campaign and this character in a way when first session, I would have never guessed that you'd be where you are as a character. I'm so interested. What the hell are you gonna do with this camera? Oh my God, I'm so interested. What the fuck? That's like very. And the fact that that was protecting the Hobby Lobby. I don't remember who said Hobby Lobby first. Star to you, whichever one of you did that.
I'm pretty sure it was Daniel that said Hobby Lobby.
It was
Was it
Wes.
Wes? Oh
Wes?
man, Wes.
Look, I just said craft store, and y'all took it and ran with it, okay? And it made something beautiful,
Oh
so.
yeah, I guess then I was the first person to have it because he's a craft store, and I said,
Yes.
"Oh, it's the Hobby Lobby." Oh, very
Yes.
nice.
This beautiful in tandem work you did. Delicious. Oh my God. Oh my gosh. And Wes, the idea that you went to Terra Nox's house, like that is so far afield from where I like everything you all do sort of befuddles me in a lo lovely way. I like not being able to like just fully guess what you're gonna do as characters because that means you're complex, interesting people. And this entire thing you did with Terra Nox was so wild and I loved it. Alex, I love Tara. She's very, very fun. It's that was a really fun sort of dynamic. Dallas and David Embargo was really fun. I think, weirdly enough, Dallas was in their element here, despite it all. And I really like got I like to see everybody's characters was really like going hard and in their element in their own way, and really got to like shine in their own way. And Alex, the pacing, I know someone else said it, the fucking pacing of this was delicious. It was perfect. It was, I love all the side characters. You always know how to up the ante in a way that is like devastating. And I just love the way this worked out. This was like super fun siege warfare. And my wish is just, I'm excited to see where this goes now. I have no idea where this is going. Things are gonna get crazy.
Yeah, this was a really, really phenomenal session. I had a blast running it and experiencing firsthand what you all were reacting, with was really, it was really great. I special like I want to call out I just stars to everyone around the board. I agree with everything that's already been thrown out there, but just everyone was really killing it tonight in playing up the characterizations and the action and the drama, the suspense. It was all there. It was great. So I mean, star to Daniel as the designer, because I feel like there was a lot of great tools for me to play with as a keeper that I got to utilize. But also just star to Hank's interactions at the end there with Wendy. Very, it was a tearjerker. You really let the dominoes like fall beautifully on that one. Like you used your moves effectively, and we knew that you were speeding towards that conclusion, but it was to serve the story, and it did. It did. It told an extremely satisfying narrative. So that tugged on my heartstrings significantly. I mean, fuck, chaotic started the Whately camera being introduced in here. That is wild. And I love having the Whately camera appear in other things as well. If it wasn't evident by the fact that I keep putting Whately's in all the things. That was so fantastic. Yeah, Wes starred at Dallas's little speech to Tara. It's one of those situations where I was like, the player's role play is so good, I'm not gonna have there be a role for this. It is just a success.
I was wondering at the end when you didn't have, I was like, no role?
Nope.
Okay.
I was like, when the role play is simply that good, I'm like, nah, it rides. That was fantastic. I really enjoyed the kind of character arc of Dallas Bartmoss, because still not a good person, but is clearly cares more than you think they would.
The big thing to describe Dallas in my brain is, yes, I'm an asshole. That doesn't make me a bad person.
I really like that, and this really showed.
Yeah.
And fuck B, I know that, like, it was the consequence of a miss, but getting dragged into a burning car and then deciding to incorporate the crown into that exact moment. And this also goes for Chaotic with incorporating your crown to also be a thing you were forgetting because of the mist touching you. But then having Roderick do this and then, like, narratively just segued into, like, it was extremely cinematic. Like, I mean, this session was so cinematic. Those moments in particular stood out to me, and inspired me in my to react as a keeper and narrate things going forward. The suspense was there. Even I, as the keeper, like, was on edge, feeling like anxious, because that's the beauty of part of the system, is that, having you guys decide to do these theories and then roll for it, and then kind of I was like, which choice are you making here? Because I was nervous, and I was like, this could go one way or the other, and all the danger was a lot of fun. I just stars, you're all fantastic. I love this campaign. Wishes, I'm very excited for the Vanished playbook. If we lose any other first responders before the conclusion of this campaign, I would hope that someone takes up the rookie. I think it would be very funny if an ultimate newbie came in at the absolute end to be real in the deep end. That'd be fun. Or any of the playbooks we haven't used yet would be fantastic. But yeah, that's it. That is my spiel.
Yeah, I gotta echo a lot of the stars. I think a star that didn't get pointed out was Alex, your monsters. That just, oh my God, as I said on break, I was very impressed with the sort of imagery about it and like how subtle you were, but at the same time it was just very obvious to me what you were going for, and I'm very impressed with that. Roddy, oh my God, you went through the ringer. Like you had third degree burns. Oh my God. And you still were just helping out people. Dallas, I think I feel a little bit more sympathy with Dallas now. I'm very fascinated again with the foil between our characters. It's just something that keeps on happening up in any game we're in together, Wes, of just like our characters are growing in opposite ways. Dallas is becoming a better person, and Mike is just getting worse. And I'm here for Mike's villain arc. And God, I was crying during Mike's no, not Mike's Hank's death scene. I'm just like, I was like, oh God, I'm gonna fall like at the funeral or 6 months later. But yeah, and stuff, the Waitley thing is, Alex, I've ran a lot of the between. I know that game inside and out. So like I know when things are calling to me, and you just gave me this on the platter of like, hey, why not make you Waitley? And I'm like, cool, I'll do everything I know about Waitleys with this character. Thank you very much.
Any other stars or wishes from anybody?
For me to write the custom move because I'm
Yeah.
bad about writing custom moves.
Yeah, fair.
To be fair, I'm just probably going to take like probably rework Voidwalker,
Yeah,
honestly
I'm thinking,
speaking.
like, somehow we'll talk. Before we go, this is not something that our first responders or even the people of Plymouth could rationalize. But through the efforts of David Embargo and the first responders, this is not to rationalize, but to keep a lid on the worst of what happened, to keep this weirdness from spilling out beyond the immediate bounds of the town. And with Hank gone, I would like Mike and Roderick to roll a single die each as the tied members for the highest reason.
Two.
On a seven, everyone may clear an appropriate condition. And instead of the weirdness of the Night of Verdigris coming back, something else lingers. We see a control panel, switches, knobs, a monitor, and a red light begins to blink. An image appears on the screen, satellite imagery of New Hampshire, Plymouth. Text appears on the screen. Paranatural anomaly detected. Paranatural anomaly detected. We see a figure in a tight suit walking down a hallway, their heels clicking against tile, walking into an office, placing files in front of an unseen figure. Pictures of Roderick Lopes, Dallas Bartmoss, Michael Whateley Hesters, Sergeant Hank McBride, and others, pictures of the town. We see a mobilized force of heavily armed soldiers, not dressed as the US military, dressed in black, tactical, official, climbing into helicopters, trucks mobilizing on the roads. And as one of these trucks passes by with black helicopters overhead, we see a logo printed on the side of the van. It is a white outline of a triangle, but the other half of it has been broken into a series of colored bars. And beneath that is the logo Prism heading towards Plymouth.